Mr. Spiegelmeyer was talking about how fast these days go by. I really wasn't thinking about it, but sitting there in the front row, it made me ponder H.G. Wells. Did anybody ever read The Time Machine? Yeah, you see a few hands go up, and I remember reading that story, and the guy who made that time machine got into it and pushed the lever forward, and time started flying by. And he said it was like the wings of a great bird, like night and day, going so quickly. And then they started merging those days. And gets like that as you get older, doesn't it? Seems that way. How fast it all happens. And I remember, this was ninth grade, when our English teacher asked us, has anyone read that book? And a few hands went up, and one of them was mine. And then she asked about another book. These were all classics. And a few hands went up, one of them was mine. And she asked about another book. And the same thing. And after a few of these, she looked at me and said, you haven't read all those books. And being a little braver than I should have, I said, yes, I have. Asked me something about one. So she had talked about The Time Machine, and then she said, well, tell me about H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. And I could tell her all about it. And then she got a little more difficult and said, tell me about Les Miserables. And I could tell her all about it. What I never told her was that I really like comic books. And I like Donald Duck and I like Superman. And my mother would buy Classic Illustrated one every time she went to the grocery store. And if that's all I had, I'd read them. And so I never really read those books. But I read the comic books. And between us and here today, this is... probably shouldn't get out. I did a lot of book reports out of those comic books. Shouldn't have done that, but I was thinking about that when Mr. Spiegelmeyer was talking about how quickly these days go by, and it made me think of the time machine. And Passover this week was April 3rd, just over a week ago, and what, today is the 10th now? And then we moved into the spring holy days, and it seems so quickly. And I would like to ask, and Mr. Spiegelmeyer did the same thing, and we didn't talk with each other. But he said, what's the purpose of these days? And he spoke about the spiritual bread we're seeking and talked about how we're physical until the second coming. And so as I was pondering what to talk about, I asked the same question. What is the purpose of these days? The real, ultimate purpose. And the answer I put is, they are part of God's perfect pathway for bringing us into His family. Mr. Spiegelmeyer said they are part of a pathway into which we are called these days. So I was interested in the commonality of that. Part of a perfect pathway from God to bring us into His family. These days were not created for angels. They weren't created for spirit beings. They were created to help physical beings become spirit. When we think about it, we might continue this thought by asking, then if that's the purpose of these days we're into now, what we're doing, what then does it really mean to enter the family of God as a spirit being? I don't know how much you ponder this, but it's something tremendously exciting to think about. I did a lot when I was a kid. I really wanted to be Superman. As a little kid, part of the comics. What does it mean to be a spirit being? And it is exciting. So anyway, I was sitting... Excuse me. There. I've had a bug too. What was that? Dr. Ross said I got the frog. That's what it is. But I was sitting on my bed at night not long ago and I was looking at mansions. Just on the internet. I don't know why that happened. And I did that once when my wife, Jackie, and I were first talking by internet. She was in Texas and I don't know why, but I looked at mansions and I pulled up a picture of one. Beautiful big white house, and I sent it to her and I said, this is the house across the street. and her, she being a better person, and I said, wow, rather than calling me what I was being. But I was looking at mansions, and this place on the first slide came up. Look at the size of this place. Aerial view. It's built as the home of one family. Isn't that a lot of room for one family? What kind of person can afford a house like that? When you look at this house, and you might notice there's a little hint right here. What is this thing right here? Well, it's a basketball court. And the owner of that house had that basketball court built. And a few years later, he decided he'd rather turn it 90 degrees, so it went this way. Couldn't have cost too much. As long as we're doing that, let's put a roof on top of it. And I think the next slide shows that. And so that last one was summer and it was warm, and now we've got some ice in the river and maybe little bits of snow up here. And we see the basketball court is now covered up. And I think the next slide shows an inside view, because I asked, who could do something like this? Who could afford a place like this? And we can see now that it's Jordan Ost. Oh, well. Excuse me. Wrong Jordan. This is the great Michael Jordan who has built this. You might have noticed on CNN about a month ago, Michael Jordan is now the first basketball billionaire. In other words, he's converted his basketball playing ability, which he's continued into ownership of a team, into over $1 billion. So this is Michael Jordan's place. And you can see how large this floor is in here. And we just saw it compared to his house, which was many times bigger than this basketball court. So he's got many times more space than what we're seeing in this basketball court. Next slide shows some of the inside of that house. Is it not beautiful? Elegant. Look what he's got in here. Beautiful modern art. Windows from floor to ceiling. Exceptionally high ceilings. Looks like a grand piano over here. Very nice furniture inside Mr. Jordan's house. I think next slide shows another view inside his house in a different area. So look how spacious. Sitting here, I believe there's a large screen entertainment system here. The height of these rooms. And again, the windows. You know, as you look for these things on the internet, they tend to lead you from one to the next. So they carried me to different mansions, and another one came up, and here it is on the next slide. This is someone else's mansion. Is that pretty? This mansion is on Hawaii. It's on one of the Hawaiian islands. I didn't look which one. And it's surrounded all around on this side by Pacific Ocean. Just beautiful. I can't imagine what the lot costs. Forget about the house that's on it. We can see an open area right here into just the hugest of rooms. Here's a very large winding staircase going up, upstairs in there. And the owner of this mansion built this so that these walls will move. And he can close this up when the weather's bad, or he can open it up when he wants to feel that Pacific breeze in the morning. Or in the evening. What a way to live. This is the house of another athlete. This is Tiger Woods' house. Amazing, amazing house. As you go up this winding staircase and upstairs, you can enter a space up here. Look at the beautiful colors. This is the master bedroom. Or we can turn and go other ways here. So the next slide shows another view of this house. So we're close to this large room. You can see where the floor slides along here, and he can open up and close this huge area inside his house. Up the stairway here, the next slide will be from this vantage point right here. Let's go ahead. And so we've come up the stairs. You see the beautiful hardwood floors everywhere. Plants in here, colorful modern art. Who knows how much those things cost? I didn't look. We can travel this way down toward the master bedroom. Let's go to the next slide and take a look at that. Could you get used to a bedroom like that? You know, I think I probably could. Beautiful Pacific out here going on and on forever. See the glass-sided sitting area out here outside of this bedroom? Next slide shows another view of that bedroom, and here's that beautiful colored ceiling we saw a moment ago. more hardwood, looking out more to the right. Got a telescope in here. Let's go to the next slide and show some of the view again. This panoramic view from the bedroom. Here's the infinity-type pool down here with water flowing over the edge. So you can stand in there and just look out into the Pacific Ocean. It's got its vacuum system I see here working. Beautiful, beautiful view from that house. One more slide I think we have of Mr. Tiger Woods' house. So we've come out of the master bedroom and come around this way, and now you can stand upstairs and look out those huge open walls. Nice sitting area down here to come in the morning and look out on that, or in the evening across your pool and out into the Pacific Ocean in the evening. What incredible wealth, is it not? These people have achieved remarkable wealth in this age. It can be a bit daunting, can it? And I remember reaching that age as a young person where I thought I was going to be something special, and I suddenly realized it's not going to happen. As you're getting older, I'm never going to be that pro athlete or that wealthy person. It can be daunting to see this type of thing that people have. But I hope we in God's church will step back and ask, is it true wealth? Is it true wealth compared to the purpose of the spring holy days, the first part of which we are completing today? Is God's real focus for all of us to become earthly billionaires in this life? Would it be good for our eternity if we did? I think about winning the lottery sometime. I've never bought a ticket. But I think I conclude it probably wouldn't be good for me for God to provide that kind of wealth. We might ask, does God tend to call billionaires? Would they tend to listen to him if he did? I don't know. Let's go to 1 Corinthians and see a little bit about this. 1 Corinthians and chapter 1 of that book. 1 Corinthians 1 and 27. Does God need assistance of the mighty? Verse 27, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. So the answer is no, God really doesn't have to have us be wealthy enough. We can finance this work all by ourselves. It's not the way it would work best. Verse 28, and the base things of the world. So that's kind of us, but in a very special, cherished way by God. And the things which are despised by others, God has chosen. And the things which are not, it means which are not the highest, to bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. So after looking at these mansions and what some people own, let's consider just another perspective. How wealthy is our Father? How wealthy is God? And look with me at Deuteronomy. Where is the true wealth? Deuteronomy 10 and verse 14, talking about God and what God possesses here. Deuteronomy 10, verse 14. Indeed, heaven and the highest of the heavens. So we're talking about everything you see up in that sky when you go out and look at night and beyond that. The highest of the heavens out there where the stars and the planets are. Indeed, all that belong to the Lord your God. Also the earth with all that is in it. The real owner of these houses we've just looked at, the real owner of Michael Jordan's mansion, unknown to him, is God. And God can require any of these possessions back anytime he wants or anytime he feels it's best for the spiritual progression of the individual involved. Anytime he believes that it's a better part of our pathway to him. What about God's wealth, though? Is he stingy with it? Or does God plan to share it with his family? Let's look in John 14. John 14 and verse 1. John 14, verse 1, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. In God's house, you know, these next words are words that I like. God can tell us anything he wants, really. He's just powerful. He can make us do what he wants us to, if that's what he wants. Or he can deal gently with us. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it weren't so, I would have told you. And this is the way God works. I'm a God of truth. If it wasn't the truth, I would have told you. And there are many mansions. And this word means, if we look up other translations, other renderings, abodes, dwelling places, abiding places. And if we search a bit more deeply, it's with a context of positions with God or offices. Very special high positions or offices in God's coming government. Very honorable position. If it were not so, I would have told you. And then Christ says, I go to prepare a place for you. So Christ, the heir of the universe, of all things, is preparing a place for us. So that's all of us. Robbie, I see you sitting out there, and it makes me think of individuals and Jasmine and just any of us. That's what Christ says he's doing. I've gone to prepare a place for you right now. And the angels are preparing New Jerusalem, and in it very special abiding places for us if we hold on to God's calling. How would we feel if Bill Gates, richest man in the world, said, how would you feel? You mean so much to me that I would give even my life to take care of you, to keep you alive, to save you. I'm going to prepare a place for you next to mine. What will we be expecting? I think the next slide shows Bill Gates' mansion complex. It's a little different. So, previews. Keep backing up to, yeah, higher, higher, higher. I don't know what all that pretty stuff's for. Okay, there we go. So, old Mr. Jordan. Sorry, I didn't realize I put so many catches in there. So there's Bill Gates' complex, and it's considerably bigger than it looks, because much of it is built underground in the hillside. And I wonder a little bit, you hear people like this talk about what prisoners they are because of their wealth, and he can't travel without a small army to protect him. But this is still a very, very nice facility where Mr. Gates is. And the next slide shows some of the inside of his mansion. Again, very well done, very elaborate. John 14, verse 3. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Your place, Christ says, will be where my place is. Well, we might ask, is Bill Gates, if he decided to do this, going to put a rundown shack beside his house? No, I don't think so. We know the quality that he would be putting into that. It would be something very nice. So we started by looking at a lot of human splendor in these first several slides. How does it compare to what God is planning? How does it compare to what these holy days are all about? And my title today is The Splendor of God. What do these holy days really picture? If we look up the definition of splendor, see if you wouldn't want any of these. Magnificence, grandeur, luxury, richness, glory, beauty, elegance, and more along those lines. Does God plan to share all of this? Everything he has with his children, using these holy days as our own very special and personal roadmap? Let's look in Romans 8. See what God says. Romans 8 and verse 14. And there's a lot of impact in here. If you just kind of feel into the verses and read what it's saying. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are the kind of guys God likes to watch now and then. No, these are sons of God. What a title. For you did not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you received the spirit of adoption from God, by whom we cry out, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, then heirs. Heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, and if that we may also be glorified together. If I find out I'm an heir of somebody, you know, Uncle Henry. I don't know if I have an Uncle Henry. I don't think that I do. But if someone came to the door and said, Uncle Henry's died and he's left you everything that he has, well, I pretty much want to know what he's got. Wouldn't that be the first question rather than, what happened to Uncle Henry? What's he got? Look in Hebrews about being heirs. Hebrews in chapter 1. Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 2. God, who at various times and in various ways spoke in the past to the fathers by the prophets, in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of a lot of good stuff, heir of all things, through whom also he made the worlds. So this last verse, verse 2, Bible.org says, how aptly Moffat, we touch on to Moffat once in a while, how aptly Moffat put it when he wrote, what the Son was to possess, he had been instrumental in making. It is little wonder that the one through whom all things have come into being should inherit them. So what is an heir then, by definition, since we're called heirs? What is this? And here are definitions. Think about the implications. A person legally entitled to the property or rank of another. A person who inherits or is entitled by law or by the terms of a will, excuse me, or agreement to inherit the property of another. A person who succeeds or is in line to succeed to a rank, title, or office. I might need a glass of water from somebody, if that's possible. Maybe there's some up here already, right? Can I have the left or the right one? Left one looks good. I spent a few days in the bed last week with just felt like allergies, really, but was a bit more than that. So, an heir by definition, a person who inherits or is entitled by law or by the terms of a will or agreement to inherit the property of another. Do we understand that this refers to us? And to what then are we entitled by terms of an agreement from the Almighty God and Creator? If we combine these verses we just read, Romans 8:17 and Hebrews 1:2, the message is children of God are heirs, joint heirs of all things. How do you process that? Consider the ocean out from Tiger Woods' bedroom window. Look up into the night sky at night. Joint heirs with Christ of all things. Let's look at the next slide. I think I put a little bit of the all things there in the world and how much is out there. There's an awful lot out there. So we've seen how some of the very wealthy live starting today. And remarkably, houses like we saw tend to be one of only several that people this wealthy may own, filled with very lavish surroundings. So let's ask, how does God live, the one who will build our house? We might consider a glimpse of God's throne from where he runs the universe and where he sits now watching What's God's throne look like? Is it pretty? Is it nice? Let's go to Revelation. Revelation 4. In verse 1 of that chapter. Revelation 4 and verse 1. After these things I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. So this is John getting a view into heaven. And the first voice which I heard was like a trumpet speaking with me, saying, "Come up here, and I will show you things which must take place after this." Immediately I was in the Spirit, so John's in a vision here. And behold, a throne set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. And he who sat there was like a jasper and a sardis stone in appearance. A number of commentaries, if you check, will tell you, or will state that the words, "and he who sat there," in verse 3, shouldn't be part of that verse. And you know, with that in mind, I look down now and I see there's a little one beside the "and" in my New King James Version Bible. And this little one brings me to a capital M in the middle text, and I had to look that up, see what it meant in the front of the Bible. It says it means majority text opinion. So majority text, says my commentary in the Bible, omits "and he who sat there," making what follows a description of God's throne, like jasper and a sardis stone in appearance. And we tend to follow that view in God's church, because no human has yet seen God the Father, and that's John 1:18, where we find that. And this would be a visionary account of the Apostle John doing just that. So we agree with the commentaries and with this majority text comment in my Bible as to that. So what then does this throne look like? Sounds beautiful. I think like a jasper and sardius stone. Where else do we see these same stones in the Bible? The jasper and the sardius stones of verse 3. Let's look in Exodus 28. I kind of was led, too, into a commentary of God's use of gemstones and where we find these in the Bible. And we hit them here as well. Exodus 28. In verse 1, instruction now to Aaron. "Now take Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel, that he may minister to me as a priest." So God is setting him aside here. "Aaron and Aaron's son Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. And you shall make holy garments for Aaron your brother for glory and for beauty." This is a big part of who God is, for glory and for beauty. "So you shall speak with all who are gifted artists, artisans." And God says, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister to me as priest. So we'll find the artists, and then God will fill them with his spirit to make appropriate clothes for Aaron to wear in his priestly duties. Verse 4, "And these are the garments which you shall make." And the following verses show very beautiful garments, and talk of the breastplate that he will wear. In verse 14, "You shall make two chains of pure gold, like braided cords, and fasten the braided chains to the settings." Verse 17, "And you shall put settings of stone in it, four rows of stones. The first row shall be a sardius, a topaz, and an emerald. This shall be the first row." In verse 18, "The second row shall be like this." In 19, "The third row shall be like this." In verse 20, "The fourth row, a beryl, an onyx, and a jasper. They shall be set in gold settings." So the jasper was the last, and the sardius was the first stone of the high priest's breastplate, just like the stones we saw in God's throne. Pulpit commentary says regarding these precious stones, The modern jasper is opaque. While it is evident that the jasper of Revelation is remarkable for its translucent character, let's look in Revelation 21. So we're comparing what these names mean in a modern sense to what they mean biblically. And this is where Pulpit is going with this. Revelation 21, in verses 10 through 11. Speaking to John again, and he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain, and he showed me the great city, holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, out of heaven, having the glory of God. Her light was like a most precious stone, like a jasper stone, clear as a crystal. So here we find that this modern jasper we know is more opaque, but the one we're finding here is described as clear as a crystal. And Pulpit continues, this jasper stone is characterized by purity and by brilliancy, features which seem to point it out as our modern diamond. And not all agree with that, but it sounds like a beautiful, beautiful stone. And so Pulpit is saying that God's throne is composed of something in part that looks like this. And the next slide shows a close-up of a very large diamond. In a different view of these verses, BibleHub.com says, in all probability, the green jasper or emerald is intended here. And that's for part of the composition of God's throne. So the next slide then shows a very beautiful emerald. If we go back to Revelation 4, where we're reading about the throne of God, Revelation 4, in verse 3. In verse 2, a throne sat in heaven, and there was one sitting on that throne. And of the throne, verse 3, and about the second line of that, like a jasper, and a sardius stone in appearance. So here we find the diamond or emerald, whatever it might be, part of God's throne is combined with another stone, this sardius, which is a red stone. And Pulpit Commentary says about that stone, the second stone, this sardius was the carnelian, always red, though a varying shade of red. Dictionary.com says of the sardius, the precious stone thought to have been a ruby in the breastplate of the Jewish high priest. So we just read about that in Exodus 28:17. Next slide then. Wow, pretty. My wife doesn't really like rubies, else she might have one. Pretty stone. So God's throne has the appearance of being made of gemstones like these. Next slide shows several together in description. So we don't know exactly what stones God has chosen, but something like these is being described. Pulpit Commentary continues, the pure jasper, together with the red sardius, may fitly typify God's purity and mercy together with His justice and judgment. Be God's throne like a diamond or like a clear green emerald? We find that God our Father dwells in incredible beauty. This is part of His character. It's part of describing the garment to be made for Aaron for glory and for the beauty. Consistent with this idea, biblical views of created spirit beings. Okay, back to the holy days and the pathway. Biblical views of created spirit beings. What are we in the process of becoming? What is the purpose of these special holy days? And that's exactly what it says. What we said was the purpose. And these created beings show how they are both very powerful views in the Bible, and also very beautiful. What do we think spirit-born co-heirs with Christ will look like? That's part of what I said. It's so exciting to think about. That's us. What do we think we will look like? Are we going to look the same as we do now? I say hardly. It changes as we get older. What does it mean to be an heir of God beyond inheriting the universe? Let's look in Daniel 10. I've always really liked this little section right here in Daniel. Been here before, Daniel 10, where we have a picture of an angelic being, one of God's other children. Let's see what the being who lives in an emerald environment, like was on that former slide. That's okay. Justin, we'll go to Jordan there in just a second anyway. But what do God's children look like, spirit children? Daniel 10 and verse 5. I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with the gold of Uphaz. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning. And we've read this, and it's impressive. His eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color, the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude. The NIV says, or translates this verse, and that's the next slide. Let's go ahead and go to that. So we're talking about a spirit child of God, this case an angelic being. NIV says his body or his chest, this being was like a topaz. And that's why I put three topaz across the top of this. It's a variable stone. Three different types of topaz. And we don't know what this being looked like. But it says here his chest region, his upper body, was like one of these stones. His face, we find, was like lightning. So you know what a real bolt of lightning looks like when you see it and how bright it is. This being's face was like lightning. His eyes were like a flaming torch. His arms and legs like the gleam of polished bronze. His voice like the sound of a multitude. This is what a being who can navigate the universe looks like. A spirit child of God. You know, this included Lucifer. We're not far from here, but spirit beings. Look in Ezekiel 28. Close to here, that when Daniel, Ezekiel 28, beginning of verse 17. What kind of spirit beings does God create? What kind of spirit beings is God in the process of creating with his now physical family? Ezekiel 28:17. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. So Lucifer, we know, was made with remarkable beauty. This beauty will include us when we're resurrected. Simply overwhelming to think about, really. When you think about this being in Daniel that was just described, we might not think about God like this very often. But you know, we can be confident that God himself is an incredibly beautiful being. If we continue in Revelation 4, so let's go back there. Revelation 4. And back to verse 3. So the throne was like a jasper and like a sardius stone in appearance. And there was a rainbow around the throne in appearance like an emerald. A rainbow around the throne of God. This rainbow or rainbows, in addition to their own beauty, represents God's faithfulness in keeping his promises. And we know Genesis 9:13, after the flood, God used the rainbow as a sign of a covenant he made with humans. This rainbow of Revelation 4 was in sight like an emerald. So we're not to make images of anything in heaven, and I'm not trying to do that. I won't try to do that. But a picture is being drawn for us here of a throne made of beautiful gemstones, diamonds and rubies, and surrounded by an emerald green rainbow. Next slide. So I just kind of put that central beautiful stone with emeralds all around to picture. What more do we see around God's throne? Look in verse 6 of Revelation 4, this chapter. But before the throne there was a sea of glass like a crystal. This is where God dwells. And reflect with me for a moment and focus just for a moment. This throne really exists. It's out there right now, and that's where God sits, and he's watching, and he's putting forth all the effort that these holy days are all about to lead us toward this type of existence, his spiritual family. And we hear about this in opening and closing prayers all the time with Christ at your right side. As you sit on this throne, both actively helping. It's a real throne of the greatest possible beauty and splendor. This is part of the message of the intent of the Spring Holy Days and what we're traveling toward. Joining God our Father and all He intends for us. Where else do we see glimpses of the beauty, the splendor of God in His world? Look in Exodus again, Exodus 24. The type of world that God and Christ, in which they dwell in the spirit realm. Exodus 24 and verse 19. I'm sorry, verse 9 of Exodus 24. Then Moses went up, also Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and they saw the God of Israel. So we know this is Christ. This is Yahweh. This is the spokesman. This is the Logos, the God of Israel, the God of the Old Testament. And there under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone, which is like the very heavens in its clarity. The NIV says, under his feet was something like a pavement made of lapis lazuli. It's a very bright blue gemstone, often used in jewelry. As blue as the sky, NIV's version. So here we have a sky blue gemstone pavement under the feet of Christ. If we can picture that, we know what a beautiful blue sky looks like. Dictionary.com says of lapis lazuli, a deep blue mineral composed mainly of lazurite with smaller quantities of other minerals, used mainly as a gem or as a pigment. Pulpit says of this verse, beyond the feet of the figure that they saw was something that looked as if it were made of bright blue sapphire stone on which this God being Christ stood. Something as clear and as blue as the blue of heaven. Next slide then shows a blue sapphire. Something like this under the feet of Christ, but as a pavement. Another view, Ezekiel. If we look in Ezekiel, back by Daniel where we were, Ezekiel 1, and this is a view of Christ. Here, Ezekiel 1 and verse 26. Ezekiel 1, 26, and above the firmament over the heads was the likeness of a throne in appearance like a sapphire stone on which the likeness of the throne was a likeness with the appearance of a man high above it. Also from the appearance of his waist and upward, I saw as it were the color of amber with the appearance of fire all around him, all around within it. And from the appearance of his waist and downward, I saw as it were the appearance of fire with brightness all around, like the appearance of a rainbow in a cloud on a rainy day. So was the appearance of the brightness all around it. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And the next slide then just shows a rainbow. So as these colors are described in addition to all that brightness as wrapping around Christ. Like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds, so was the radiance around him. Again, is it beautiful? This realm where our Father lives and occupies. This was the appearance of the glory surrounding the Lord. Another glimpse of Christ. An incredibly beautiful God being with splendor all around him. You know, from that perspective, think of what Christ stepped out of to become our Passover. Think of what he walked away from for a bit, what he left. Again, we might ask, will the God who is working so hard through these holy days to bring us into his family, will the Christ who dared die for us share this kind of splendor with the family they're now creating? Is that their intent? So I asked when I started, if Bill Gates was the one preparing a home a dwelling place for us, would we be excited about that? What kind of dwelling place is God preparing for us? Look in Revelation 21. What is God preparing for us? What is this pathway we're on through this holy day plan? Revelation 21 and verse 9. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls filled with the seven last plagues came to me and talked with me. I think we'd really listen in a situation like that. And he said, "Come, I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife." And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. And we read this next verse just a little bit ago. Having the glory of God, her light was like a most precious stone, like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. Also, she had a great and high wall with 12 gates and 12 angels at the gates and their names written on them. Verse 18, the construction of the wall of the city was again of jasper, and the city was pure gold like clear glass. The foundation of the wall of the city, the foundations were adorned with all kinds of precious stones. In verse 21, the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each individual gate was of one pearl. And the street of the city was pure gold like transparent glass. This city will shine with the glory of God, and its brilliance will be like that of precious jewels, clear as crystal and polished gold. Next slide just kind of shows a collection of these and the construction of New Jerusalem. And you do have to wonder what kind of earth is coming and what kind of universe is coming and what God intends as we go out and develop that kingdom. With New Jerusalem, just read about here, about its construction, the home base for a kingdom that will expand forever. Isaiah 9:7 talks about that. The increase of his government and his kingdom, there will be no end. Will this glory, God's beautiful splendor, spread through the universe with us as builders? What beauty will it include beyond the beauty of the children of God as they will look as spirit beings? We don't know exactly the details of what God is planning. 1 Corinthians 13 verse 12 says we only see it now through a glass dimly, but we do have amazing glimpses. And that's what I've been trying to do today, trying to show small glimpses of the splendor of God. What do we know? God is our Father. Our future is to be like Him. Christ is our older brother. We are to be co-heirs with Him. Our future is also to be like Him, the second God being. Just what all does God have planned for His family members? Just what all will God share with us? As Paul said, we can't grasp it right now. But we know God is a being of love, joy, happiness, and unspeakable splendor. And He has declared His intention to share His perfect nature and His entire creation, including New Jerusalem, with us, His future family. That's the purpose of these spring holy days. That's what we're doing here. That's what it's all about. It's going to be something remarkable.